Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Reb Yeshiva with this week's Midrash of the Week podcast. Today we're going to look at a Midrash on the very interesting character of Korach. At the beginning of Sefer Tehillim, right, in Perek Aleph, the first Mizmor, we read, Ashrei ha'ish asher lo halach ba'atzat resha'im uv'derech hata'im lo amad uv'moshav leitzim lo yashav. Happy is the man who has not walked in the wicked's counsel, nor in the way of offenders has stood, nor in the session of scoffers has sat. But the Lord's teaching is his desire, and his teaching he murmurs day and night. And such a person, right, who is learning Torah day and night, he shall be like a tree planted by the streams of water, asher piryo yiten biito va'aleu lo yibol v'chol asher yaseh yetzliach. And such a tree planted by the waters bears fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither, and all that he does, he prospers. And the next pasuk goes on, Lochein harishayim, right? It's not like this with the wicked. On this mizmor, Midrash Tehillim says about the phrase Uvemoshav leitzim lo yashav, right? Does not find himself in the session of scoffers, does not sit in the session of scoffers, right? Leitzim being scoffers. Ze Korach, right? Who is the scoffer, right? Who is the one who scoffs, who mocks? Shehaya mitlotzetz al Moshe v'Aharon, when he would scoff Moshe and Aharon. Ma'asa, what did he do? Kines kol hakahal, shine'emar, vayakel aleihem Korach, et kol ha'eda, right? That Korach, gather the whole Edah, the whole assembly there. He tchilu mar leitzanut, and he began to say scoffing. Va'amar lahen, when he tells him the following story, Almana achat hayta b'shchunati, v'ima shtei ne'arot yitomot, v'hayta la sadeh achat. Right, there was a widow in my area, in my neighborhood, and she had two orphan daughters, meaning the father and husband was dead, and there was a widow and her two daughters, her two orphan daughters. And she had one field. Right, she came to plow her field, and Moshe said to her that you may not plow an ox and a donkey together. Right, it's a prohibition in the Torah that you can't plow with an ox and a donkey together, pulling the same plow. Ba'ata lizroa, she came to plant seeds. Amar la Moshe, sadcha lo tizra kilayim, right? You can't plant in your fields kilayim, right? The mixing of two different species together in one field. Ba'ata liktzor v'la'asot arema, she came to reap. Amar la Hanichi leket shichcha upeya, right? Don't forget that you have to leave for the poor, right? The three different laws that you have to leave. A corner of the field for the poor. You have to leave sheaves that drop for the poor, and you have to leave a certain amount of bundles of the produce that you grow in the field, right? These are all various forms of tzedakah, gifts that you have to give to the poor people when you have a field and you grow produce. Moshe reminds her that she has to do those things as well. Ba'ata lasot goren, amar la tni truma utrumat maaser umaaser rishon umaaser sheni. Right, when she came to the point where she was going to put everything into the silos, into the storehouses, Moshe says to him, don't forget, you have to give truma and trumat maaser and maaser rishon and maaser sheni. Right, all of the various tithes that you have to take off to give to the kohanim and the levi'im, etc. Hitztika lea tadin v'natnalo. Right. And she did it. She justified this to herself, and she did it. Ma asta? Machra et hasadeh, ulakha shnei kivsot lilbosh mi gizotehen v'lehenot mi perotehen. So what did she do? Right, having enough already with all of these laws having to do with the field, she She buys two sheep so that she can provide for herself clothing from the wool and to benefit from the sheep that will be born from these sheep. Kevan sheyildu, right, and when these new sheep were born, ba'aharon, comes along Aharon, the Kohen Gadol, va'amar la tni li et ha-bechorot, sheken amar li ha-kadosh baruch hu, right, give me the firstborn, because that's what Hashem said, right, and indeed such is a law in the Torah. Kol ha-bechor asher yulad, bivkarcha v'toncha ha-zachar, right, all of the firstborns of your sheep and your cattle, these go to the Kohen. Hitztika aleha tadin v'natna lo, right? She agreed and she did it. Higia zman giza, when it came time to shear the sheep, ugazazah otan, and she sheared them. Amarla, Aharon says to her, tni li reshit hagez shekein amar li HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Oh, by the way, Hashem also told me that I get the first shearing of the sheep. As it says, v'reshit gez tzoncha titen lo. Amra, ein li koach lamod ve'ish hazeh, hare ani shochet otan ve'ochal otan. Right, and so she says, right, enough of this Aharon, the Kohen. I don't have the strength to deal with him. I'm going to slaughter my sheep and I'm going to eat them. Kevan sheshachtan, amar la, tni li hazro ha'lechayam ve'keva. Right, Aharon says, you know, not so fast. Right, I also get certain portions of any animals that are eaten. Amra lo, afilo sheshachateti otam. Otan lo nitzalti miado. Right, even if I've slaughtered them, I still haven't escaped. I haven't been spared. This man, hen alai cherem. Right, they are cherem. I'm dedicating them to Hekdesh. Right, they are now sanctified. They're for the mitash. I cannot. They meaning they're no longer in my hands. Amarla, tnali shekach amar katuv. Kol cherem b'Yisrael lecha yihyeh, right? Anything that is dedicated to the mikdash, anything that has become hekdesh, right, goes to the kohen as well. So Aaron says, you have to give it to me now. Natla vehalachlo, right? He takes the sheep and he goes. Henicha bocha hiu shtei benoteh, right? And leaves her crying with her two daughters. Arich keden ha bizta aluvata, right? Is this the proper thing to do? This poor woman who has been robbed. Kol kach hem osim otolin v'hakadosh baruch hu. Right. So Korach says, you see, all of these things they do, and they attribute it to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Right. They all say this is Hashem's will. This is a mitzvah of Hashem. Mikan shehaya litzan. Right, and from this we know that Korach was a litzan, a scoffer. Now that Korach is scoffing Moshe and Aaron, right, is clear. Right, he's making a lot of fun of them. He's making them look, you know, very, very bad and very insensitive, and scoffing at them. But the truth is, when you first look at this midrash, right, first glance, or the one can't help but wonder a little bit, like, oh, well, this situation that he's describing, Korach, it really is very unpleasant, right? Can it be that the mitzvot that he's listing here? But then, when you look carefully at this midrash, at this situation that he has woven here, that he's describing, it suddenly begins to fall apart, right? One realizes that what he is presenting here in this story is one big fabrication that is meant to make Moshe and Aaron look very bad, but it doesn't really hold any water. All right, so let's look at it again more carefully. Okay, so we're talking about a widow with two daughters, right? Clearly a difficult situation, but immediately something should catch our attention. Vahita la sadeh echat. Right, this widow has a field. Right, this already puts her in an entirely different category than what we usually think about when we think about a yatom and an almana. Right, the situation of a yatom and an almana, as it's usually presented in the Torah, right, one of the two of the categories of people that we have to look out for, that we have to make sure that they are taken care of. We're talking about people who have no way of providing for themselves, right, because of the way that the inheritance, was set up. Right, you know, certain well-known examples, exceptions rather, you know, aside for a moment. Generally speaking, if there was a woman with daughters, they had no way of providing for themselves. They didn't necessarily have property. They didn't necessarily have any means from which to eat. So already here, we have a different situation, right? Because these three women, or this woman and her two daughters, have a field, right? Now, clearly, right, each of the examples of the mitzvot that this woman is reminded of throughout this scenario is are all various mitzvot that, according to the way that Korach is presenting them, makes her life harder and harder, right? First, she is told that there are very specific ways that she can or cannot plant in her field. She cannot use a shor and a chamor together. Right, so that's one sort of limitation. And she also can't plant more than one type of food on her on this one field that she has, right? So so these two things limit her in what she is able to do. And then, of course, there are all the various taxes, so to speak, that she has to take off, right? First for the poor people, then for the Kohanim and the Levi'im. And this, like, also reduces the amount of produce that she has for herself from this field, right? But what is very interesting, right, is what these various mitzvot that Korach mentions, what they are really all about. The way that he presents them, right, because it's happening to an almana, because it's happening to yitomot, right, they make us, Korach makes us feel when we're reading the story that they are unjust, right, that they are not fair mitzvot. When actually, right, let's start with the mitzvot of the various taxes, right, those mitzvot are specifically mitzvot in the Torah which do the exact opposite, right? These are the mitzvot which are the great equalizers in Israelite society, the mitzvot that make sure that the people who don't have any way of providing for themselves have a way of providing for themselves, right? Had this almana not had a field, she would be able to go and into somebody else's field to take what she needs, right? And other people, right? The strangers, the gerim, all the people who don't have ways of supporting themselves, right? They're allowed to go and take the leket, the shichicha, and the peah. And as for the Kohanim and the Levim, as the Torah explains repeatedly, right, the reason they get all these things is because they don't have fields, right? They too don't have a way of providing for themselves in the agricultural society of ancient Israel, and this was the way that they were to provide for themselves, or to be provided for, right? So these are specifically mitzvot which are the opposite of unfair, the opposite of insensitive. They are the mitzvot which make sure that all the people who are easily overlooked, all the people who are easily downtrodden, that they are taken care of, right? And, you know, repeatedly, the ger, the yatom, the almana, the levi, right, they're all mentioned over and over again in the Torah as people who we have to make sure that they are not oppressed, that they are not overlooked when everybody else has their fields and is doing their harvests. Now, granted, right, I don't want to overlook the fact that this woman is in a difficult situation. I mean, she is an almana, she does have two daughters to take care of, and she has only one field, right? This is not something to be overlooked. Of course it's difficult, right? We'll talk more about this in a moment. But nevertheless, she does have a way to support herself, right? This it might be difficult, but her way of supporting herself is there. And so what we essentially have, if you look carefully at the way that the Midrash progresses, the way that Korach's story progresses, is that we have a woman who has this field, but she isn't interested in being part of any of these mitzvot, any of these requirements to help others from what she herself has, right? She when she is asked to give from her field to the leket shichecha and peah, and then later on for the trumot and the maasrot, right? She does it, but then she says, "Ugh, I've had enough of this. I'd rather get something more for my money." So she sells it and she buys the sheep, and then she finds out that too, she has to give from her stuff to somebody else, right? To the kohanim, right? And she says, "Ugh, I'm also not interested in that. I don't want to share, right? I don't want to have to give. I want to figure out a way that I can have it all to myself." So she slaughters the animals so that she can eat them. And there, too, she realizes she has to give it away. So what she ends up doing is making it cherem, right? She ends up making it hektesh, right? She'd rather give it away so to the mikdash so that she doesn't have to, so that even she can't eat from it, can't partake of it, as long as she doesn't have to share it with others, right? It's a remarkable situation, right? Constantly trying to get away from doing these things, and then she ends up not having anything at all. Those are the mitzvot, right, where she has to, you know, give. She has to give from her stuff to others who need it. So basically, all of those mitzvot are this woman avoiding all of these ben adam l'chaveiro. Mitzvot, all of these situations, she's avoiding the situation where she has to give of herself to help somebody else, right? In these Ben Adam HaChavero situations. Now let's go back for a moment to the first two mitzvot that are mentioned, right? That you can't, she can't plant in her field, she can't plow her field using a chamor and a shor together, and she cannot plant kilayim. She can't plant two different species in the same field, right? So kilayim, right? Let's start with that one, right? It's a mitzvah, right? The reason isn't really given, but one reason that is offered often is the idea that you know, Hashem created the world with certain species, right? And out of recognition of God as the creator of the world, we're not allowed to make new species, right? God decided what the species are. It's not up to us to start, you know, doing all sorts of science experiments to make a species that God himself did not make, right? So that's one generally accepted idea of what kilayim is all about, the prohibition of kilayim. As for the plowing the field with the chamor and the shor together, right? Some say that that's an issue of cruelty in the animals because the shor is stronger, the ox is stronger than the donkey, so it's unfair to the donkey, right? It'll be harder for the donkey. That's one explanation that is given. But there are others who say that no, this is another example of kilayim, and indeed, the mitzvot of kilayim are mentioned twice, once in Sefer Vayikra and once in Sefer Dvarim, and in one place where you have the mention first of kilayim of the field, and then you have that you're also not allowed to have kilayim of animals. You're not allowed to mix breeds of animals, and then you have shatnes, the prohibition of shatnes, that you can't mix wool and flax, another type of prohibition of kilayim, right? That's in one place. And in the other place, you have the same thing, except that instead of the prohibition against mixing different species of animals, you have this mitzvah, which is mentioned here, of not plowing in a field together, which leads some, right? You can see this in the Dat Mikra commentary, to say that the prohibition of not plowing together is part of this kilayim prohibition, right? If you're plowing them together, if they're always together, you might end up trying to breed them together, and therefore that is prohibited as well. So if that's the case, then we have another example here of kilayim, of not mixing breeds together, and which goes back to the same idea, right? That basically by trying to create a new breed, you are in a certain sense denying Hashem as creator of the world, and denying that God is the creator and not us. So looking at the broader scenario here, right? What is this almana basically doing by selling her field, by buying the animals, and then slaughtering the animals, and then finally giving the animals away? Is she's avoiding basically the two major categories of the mitzvot. On the one hand, she is trying very hard to avoid having to do her part for society, right? To help out those in need. And she is also avoiding those mitzvot, right, which are in recognition of God as creator of the world. Not surprisingly, right, it is these two issues which are essential, or the essence of Korach and his rebellion. Right at the beginning of Parashat Korach, Korach and his whole entourage come before Moshe and Aaron, and they say, "Rav lachem ki kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim uvetocham Hashem umadu titnasu al kahal Hashem." Right. So they say here, right, "Why are you trying to make yourself? Right, better than all of Am Yisrael. All of Am Yisrael is kadosh. Why are you making yourselves, you know, literally holier than thou? Why are you saying that you are above us? You are better than we are. So ostensibly, Korach is saying here, right? We are all holy, right? We should all be equal, right? There should be nobody who is higher than anybody else. But Moshe immediately sees right through this, and just a couple of psukim later, pasuk chet vayomer Moshe al Korach shimuna b'nei Levi. Right, he says to Korach, listen, you sons of Levi, Hameat mikem ki hivdil Elohei Yisrael etchem me'adat Yisrael lahakriv etchem elav, la'avod avodat mishkan Hashem v'la'amod lifnei ha'evdal l'shertam, v'yakrev otcha v'kol achecha b'nei Levi itach, u'vikashtem gam kehuna. Right, he realizes that what Korach really wants is to be the Kohen himself. But he's a Levi, a rather important Levi, it seems. And he wants more, right? He doesn't want to be just merely a Levi. He wants to be the Kohen. So he's not really looking for equality. He's looking for the job, for the top job. So a rebellion that starts off looking like something which is both for the benefit of the people, right? We're all equal, we're all holy, and also, you know, in a sense, also for the benefit of God, right? I am the rightful leader, right? Even, you know, even if that is, let's say, what Korach wants, right? Let's rephrase that, sorry, a slight error there. Also for God, in the sense that Moshe and Aaron are not the true representatives of God, right? So the Korach is trying to both help Am Yisrael and also, in a sense, right, help God by getting rid of these two imposters, right? Moshe puts him in this place right away and realizes that really Korach is just interested in the power, and he's not really interested in correcting any wrong, not the one that supposedly has been done. Ben Adam l'chaviro, or Ben Adam l'makom. And this is a theme that is played up a lot in the Midrash, right? That is what Moshe sees in Korach, right? This man who is sinning both against others, right, other people, as well as against Hashem. So, for example, in terms of the Bein Adam LaMakom aspect, right, in the Zohar it says, Korach hikhish et b'riyat olam, right? Korach denied the creation of the world, right, which fits very well in with those mitzvot that we saw, which also are meant to enhance the idea of Hashem being the creator. Or a different example in Midrash Hagadol Bamidbar Tetzayin Pasuk Kavchet, Amar Moshe lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Al Shehil Igu Alai Al Achi Shatakti. Right, I was willing to stay quiet when he was just mocking me and my brother. Ve'al Bizyona Shel Torah Eini Shotek. But when he starts mocking the Torah, right, and by extension Hashem, I am not willing to be quiet, right? So again, this Midrash recognizing that there's two types of rebellions going on here with Korach, both against the leadership, Moshe and Aaron, but also ultimately against God. He's not just saying that Moshe and Aaron don't represent God, he's also denying God as well. But I think that this Midrash, from Midrash Tehillim, is trying to emphasize one more aspect of Korach as well. And in order to understand that, one has to be familiar with a different set of Midrashim about Korach, something that the Midrash emphasizes over and over again about Korach. Right now, I have to step back for a moment and say, as I've said in other podcasts, that Midrash is not one monolithic work, right? That we can't assume that, or it's not true, that whomever wrote this Midrash also wrote the other one, or was even aware necessarily of the other Midrash as it exists. However, and this we've also seen in many of the examples that we've learned in the podcast, Midrash is a very organic being, such that while it might not be easy to prove, there's no way of saying, I know that whomever wrote this Midrash was aware of these other Midrashim, that one senses over and over again that Midrashim assume the existence of the other. Again, not necessarily even the Midrash as we have it, but the idea that is found in the other Midrashim was kind of known out there in the world of Chazal, and they are the basis of other Midrashim in the vast sea of Midrash. And what I'm referring to in this case, in the case of Korach, is this idea that is found in many midrashim, that Korach was a very, very, very wealthy man, right? And that this idea has even like trickled down into modern lingo, where if you want to say that somebody is very, very rich, like filthy rich, you would say they're rich like Korach, or in Hebrew, Ashir Kakorach. Right? So why? Right? There's nothing in the story that explicitly, blatantly says that Korach was a rich man. And yet this is an idea that appears repeatedly in Midrash. I'm not going to go reading through all of these Midrashim right now. I have put a few of them on the website for those who are interested at looking at some examples. But I am going to look at one example in a moment. But you know, where does this come from? It could be because it says when the earth swallows up Korach and his assembly at the end of the story, that also all of their possessions go down. So perhaps because the Torah finds it necessary to mention all of his possessions, that the possessions must have been significant, right? So that's one possibility of where this idea comes from. It could also be, right, from the arguments that Moshe and Korach have in the story, where Moshe is essentially accusing Korach of greediness. You have so much, Korach, he says, right? And yet you want more, right? And so this is the typical of not only a rich man, because there are some rich men who are very generous, but a rich man who is very miserly. And that is specifically the type of rich man that that the Midrash accuses Korach of being. And so I want to look at one particular, very short expression of this, of Korach's wealth and his miserliness. And this is found in the Gemara, Masechet Pesachim, Daf Kuf Yutel Amud Aleph, where it says, it quotes a pasuk from Kohelet Perek Hei, Pasuk Yud Bet, Osher Shamur Leva'alav Lira'ato, right? Wealth that is kept for its owners, right, meaning they keep it to themselves, is to their detriment. It is bad for them. It only does bad things for them. And the Gemara comments, Zo Oshro Shel Korach, right? This is the wealth of Korach, right? Wealth that he kept for himself, and it ends up being very bad for him. Right, so those who suggest that this is because it caused him to be arrogant, it caused him to want more. What I want to do, however, is to look at the psukim in Kohelet, right, to see the pasuk that was just quoted, that the Midrash says is talking about Korach, in its context, in the book of Kohelet, and I think that will lead us back to our original Midrash and enhance our understanding of that Midrash as well. Right, generally speaking, what's going on in Kohelet in this perek is a statement against running after wealth, right? That it's not good to run after wealth. It says here, "Ve'yitron eretz bakol, hu melech l'sadeh ne'evad, ohev kesef lo yispa kesef, umi ohev behamon lo tvua, gam ze havel." The psukim are somewhat complicated, and I can't go into the various ways of picking apart the psukim in this context. But the general idea that is being expressed here is that while one cannot eat money, right? Coins are not a source of sustenance, and the more you have money, the more you love money, it won't satisfy you, right? However, a field, right, is the best possession that a person can have, because from the field you can always eat, right? And this idea is expressed in the continuation of the perek as well. Right, in pasuk Yud Aleph, mitukash nat ha'oved im me'at v'im harbe yochel v'hasava le'ashir einenu meniach lo lishon. Right, the sleep of a person who works the field, right, is sweet, and on the other hand, right, the vast possessions, the wealth of the wealthy person, will not let him sleep. And then the finally, in Pasuk Yud Bet, the following Pasuk, is the Pasuk which is quoted in that Midrash. Yesh ra'a chola, ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh, osher shamur leva'alav lera'ato. Right, what is this sickness, this bad thing that I have seen under the sun? Wealth which is kept by the owner to himself. Right, it is bad for him. Right, that is the pasuk that according to Midrash is talking about Korach. It struck me, right, that this section in the book of Kohelet is the mirror image of what we saw in the story that Korach constructs about the widow. There you have somebody who has a field, right, but doesn't want to share, doesn't want to give to others, keeps it all to herself, and therefore ultimately, right, doesn't have anything, not for herself and not for anybody else, right? There is nothing left for her. Here is described the exact opposite, that as long as you have a field, then that is enough, right? Then that person is wealthier than the wealthiest man in town. And so seeing these two midrashim juxtaposed, one can't help that one plays against the other, right? That if this in Kohelet, if the description here in Kohelet is, according to the midrash, the essence of Korach, right? The person who runs after wealth, and in the end that's what does him in, The almana, who has the field, right? She potentially could be the better scenario as described in Kohelet. She has the field, but she turns into this Korach-like character. So essentially, what we see, right, in that scenario that he constructs, is that it's not really describing the real situation of a real widow. And it's clear that he's making up the story in all cases, because there was no widow during the time of Moshe and Aharon when they were living in the desert. They weren't working fields, right? So all of this is clearly a made up story. Right? That's absolutely clear. But even the scenario is false. It's not real. And what it really reflects, right? It really reflects the Leitzan himself. It reflects the man who was speaking, rather than some true story about some poor widow somewhere. And it basically echoes what Moshe claims about Korach all along, right? That Korach isn't objecting to Moshe or what Moshe says because of some higher ideal, right? Not because Moshe is false or the mitzvot that he says are truly unfair, but rather because he himself is a miserly rich man who just wants more and more and more for himself. Just like this supposed widow in the story, and that's why he rebels, right? His objection to all of those examples given in the story, right? The both the Ben Adam Makom and particularly the Ben Adam Chaveiro mitzvot mentioned in that story that he creates, right? He objects to all of those not because they're really unfair to this. To this almana, but because he himself, like we eventually saw about the almana in the story, he doesn't want to give. He doesn't want to have to give of his wealth to anybody else. The Midrash is implying, and certainly when we see these two Midrashim together, that is what eventually leads to Korach's downfall.